present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website, read by Neil Sleet.
A massive sinkhole has appeared on a street in St Albans, forcing the evacuation of several families from their homes in the night. Heavily pregnant, Gemma Bagshaw, who's expecting to give birth any day now, said she was woken by the sound of the hole opening up.
Our thanks to everyone for sending that piece of mischief in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkind and Holly Walsh. Opposite them, on my left, Terry Christian and Susan Kalman. This week, the News Quiz comes from the lovely Lyceum Theatre in Crewe. Or, to give the town its full name, Change at Crewe. Hugo, whose speech went right to the centre?
Right, well, this is presumably about the Conservative Party conference, where I've been this week, where, as you might have read, things were made considerably more unpleasant by a small minority of shouting, spitting political extremists who hated everything. And one of them was Theresa May. She took quite a hard line on immigration. It's one of the first big speeches, pointing out how upsetting it can be for any community which has to absorb a vast influx of new people with completely alien values, which is probably something she'd learnt when she arrived in Manchester with a whole lot of big-haired, braying, weird-shoed Tories like her. We had George Osborne the same day, championing his vision of the Northern Powerhouse, which always sounds like one of those sort of wrestlers you used to get on Saturday morning television.
I think it sounds like a club night at the Hacienda.
Well, it's Osborne's great idea to bring together the great cities of the North, such as Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, Crewe, bring them all together as a competitor to London. So that went down about as well as you'd expect in Manchester from the Conservative Chancellor, George Osborne. And then on the last day, we had Cameron, and his speech, as you said in the question, it was all about shifting the Tories to the centre, with his view being now Corbyn's taking Labour to the left, and you've got UKIP on the right. He wants the Tories to sort of ride down the middle. Particularly, he wants them to be the party of social mobility, which, as he puts it very interestingly, he said was about rising from the bottom to the top, or even from the middle to the top. And I'm very interested in this idea of rising from the middle to the top, because I don't see why not. I think, you know, say you went to a minor public school, for example, there's no reason why you shouldn't dream of sending your children to a major public school. perhaps you've got a three-bed holiday home in the Cotswolds. What's wrong with one day hoping for a four-bed holiday home in the Cotswolds? And it's these kinds of everyday concerns, these sort of concerns of ordinary working people that Cameron's modern Conservatives are fighting for, because we are all in it together.
Yeah. I loved his speech, you know, when he launched his assault on poverty by taking more money off the poor. Yeah. It's a bit like his assault on obesity. He'll be force-feeding fat people cream buns, won't
he? I like the fact that they got quite under attack. You were saying earlier about the protests that happened outside, the anti-austerity
protests. Oh, and them being nasty.
Yeah, and they were like, you know, there was people outside complaining that they couldn't feed their children and then throwing eggs and flour at people. That's the basics of pancakes.
To be fair, it is part of Manchester's tradition because, you know, obviously when the Duke of Wellington was a Tory Prime Minister, his train carriage got stoned. You know, he threw big rocks at it. So really, it's progress in a way.
That made me think of our Prime Minister getting stoned, but that's different, right?
Anyone see Osborne's speech?
Oh, I loved Osborne's speech. I loved that he was talking about everything that everyone loves talking about, like business rates. Pretty sexy subject. And, you know, they used to use these sort of phrases that you go, I'm not sure what that means, and then you work it out. Like, he's the sort of person who would say, well, we're not reducing benefits, we're making them bijou. Or, like, a homeless person isn't homeless, they've now got extensive outdoor space.
For me, the problem is that Theresa May, George Osborne, Boris Johnson, they were essentially leadership speeches. They're all just jockeying for position for who's going to take over. when Cameron goes, and the worst thing he ever did was say he was going to go, because now every Conservative Party conference is essentially an audition for the leadership of the Conservative Party.
Fighting like ferrets in a sack, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's the least Tory analogy I can think of.
But it did sort of show all the speeches, the way it was, this whole kind of thing of the Tories that they're going to be the party of working people and they're going to be the party of immigrants and of social mobility and of race equality. And it's just like, they can say anything. I mean, just because there's basically no Labour Party. You know, I mean, it's like, I know Corbyn's meant to be famed for his integrity and his approachability and all that, but he's not really doing a great job. I mean, you look at how that week went, you look at Cameron's speech and the sort of the open goals in it, that how are you going to bring about social mobility when you've just announced this sort of massive cuts in tax credits, or not announced, just about to bring them in. And I mean, and you've got Labour, all Corbyn's only response to his speech was, he was a bit mean to me. You know, I mean, it's like they might as well have the party led by a bit of blue tack rolled in hair. It's just rubbish.
Hugo, can I ask a question? Because you're at the conference, you know all the standing ovations.
Yeah.
Does someone kind of give a signal, or is that a genuinely natural response to the charisma that is David Cameron?
No, they'll stand up for anything. And in fact, if you sit in that hall and you're a journalist and you don't stand up, people are kind of looking daggers at you. It happens to all of them. It's terrible. They're all sincere. They really are. But one of the reasons, actually, why this party conference season has been more interesting than most is because all the journalists covering it aren't exhausted, because no one had to go to the Liberal Democrat Party conference. Because there's only three of them. And normally, by the time you get to the end of the Tories being the last one, except for the SNP, you've got all these hacks who've been on the road for 5 weeks, for 6 weeks. You know, they're turning up in their dressing gowns with sort of thermoses and sort of smoking in the front, whereas this time they were all still relatively fresh.
They're talking about not breaking next year for the Lib Dem conference, aren't they? Have you heard this?
What do you mean, not breaking?
Not breaking Parliament for it, that they'll just keep going.
Well, they'll just do it in the canteen, sort of thing.
Yeah. I just think that's...
Have a slightly longer lunch one day.
Inevitably and scintillatingly, this is about the latest escapades of Prime Minister and walking porcine punchline David Cameron, who addressed the Conservative Party conference this week. At the start of the conference, large numbers of protesters gathered outside the conference hall. I have to say, when you see these guys hurling missiles and screaming abuse, it makes you realise how much they could achieve if they used that energy to embrace the world of opportunities available to them in the workplace. And our thanks to Ian Duncan-Smith for sending that one in. Home Secretary Theresa May, filling the much-coveted Rivers of Blood slot, made an... made an uncompromising speech in which she pledged an immigration crackdown. Her speech proved a little controversial, in much the same way that the Holocaust is a bit of a sensitive topic. 2 points to Hugo. Susan, who's Afghan and done it again?
This is the bombing of the Medicine Sans Frontières hospital in Afghanistan. Now, the facts of the case are that a hospital was bombed by the Americans with loss of life, lots of injuries, and the organisation itself are calling for an inquiry into what happened. And the interesting thing was the United States' reaction to this, which was, to me, a clear indication that President Obama and his advisers are great fans of Just a Minute. Because they managed to explain what happened to the hospital without deviation, repetition, or hesitation. Because they described that one incident, which could be described as a war crime. Let's say the topic is war crimes, as Nicholas Parsons cheerily narrates across. They described it as collateral damage, a tragic accident, the responsibility of the Afghan government, and finally, a mistake. Of course, there was some repetition, because let's face it, they have done this before. And Obama has now said, yes, it was a mistake. Now, I once used chili oil that I'd bought at a farmer's market in the shower. That was a mistake. Bombing a hospital and killing 22 people is not really a mistake.
Now, the Russians have had a very different attitude to aerial bombardment this week.
They're bombing everything. I mean, they're just sort of starting wars all over the place, aren't they? Their endeavours in Syria are one of the most sort of cynical, fake, mendacious conflicts since the last war we started, really. I mean, basically, what they're doing is they are bombing Syria quite thoroughly, quite brutally, claiming they're bombing ISIS and, in fact, bombing everybody who isn't Assad, which sort of leads to the very exciting prospect that they might be bombing the people who we're working with and we might be bombing the people they're working with. And that's totally how World War III starts in all the crap novels I read as a teenager. Yeah.
Of course, the solution for Obama or anyone, as we all know, and Obama should take a leaf out of Tony Blair's book, because all you need to do is just appoint someone, maybe a civil servant, to do an inquiry over something that's happened. And then about 6 or 7 years later, everyone will still be going, where was that inquiry? I've forgotten about it. Let's all just move on.
Well, bleakly, this is the US bombing of a hospital in the Afghan city of Kunduz, a hospital controlled by Medicine Sans Frontières, which translates as Doctors Without Borders, although in this case it's more a case of doctors without seemingly any protection under international law. The big question is whether it's a war crime, because there are strict definitions of what constitutes a war crime. It has to be a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions, it has to run contrary to the statutes of the International Criminal Court, and this is crucial, it has to not be committed by the United States of America. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Holly have 5, and Terry and Susan have 4. We start round two with a cutting from the Whitewell Holiday Park website.
The following evening entertainment is available at the Holiday Park. Monday night, music, and Tuesday night, bingo. Please note that bingo is subject to numbers.
Thanks to Marion Kampf in Lantwit Major for sending us that. Terry, who has been ripped off by their own employees?
Oh, this is the Air France workers, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, this is the story that some rather unhappy Air France workers ripped the shirts off the back of some of their bosses.
I love them. I love the French. Is that not a good thing? I do a kind of admire. I think that they're actually much better at than us at being a mob, aren't they? Basically, they kind of grabbed hold of, was it some HR bloke and some management bloke and sort of stripped them naked and all the rest of it. In some ways, it could have been like the end of a One Direction concert, couldn't it? Only with more garlic and violence. I've always admired the French. Well, you know, my dad was a trade unionist, but for me, there wasn't enough aggro. You know, Transport and General Workers Union. And while I don't condone violence, and in no way do the BBC condone it either, you know, if every time some lickspittle human resources bloke announced massive job cuts, he was scared that he might end up being lynched, that'd be great. No, because it would add some truth. I don't mean it in a spiteful way. I think it would add some truth to that slice of managerial bull when they come out with, you know, this is difficult for us as well. Well, damn right it is, mate. Get your kit off. Or we give you a group kicking.
It may be that the lynching could have a sort of team bonding aspect to it. Well, that's brought everyone together, hasn't it? That's probably...
Well, I loved it. It was Hollande's response to this, was he said, these protests are damaging the image of France. And it's like, what do you think the image of France is?
What I like about the French as well is, unlike us, it's like the French government are actually scared of the people, whereas, like, with us and the Americans, the people are scared of the government, aren't they?
Yeah. I'm not
and
sure.
I quite like that being flipped on its head. I like the fact that they kick off when something that they don't like happens. Well, we just sort of moan about it, don't we, in the pub?
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you should lead the revolution, Terry, but I certainly think you should narrate it. arrestingly, oui, vraiment, this is the story of two Air France executives who literally had the shirts pulled from their backs as they ran from a mob of striking workers after discussions designed to prevent 2,900 job losses, I think it's fair to say, broke down. These events had the whole of France in an uproar, with the country divided between those who support the workers and those who deplore the damage done to some presumably impeccable tailoring. The half-naked executives had to run through the mob and then climb over a chain-link fence to escape, a format that has been snapped up by ITV for its winter schedule. And which will hopefully be hosted by Holly Willoughby, fingers very much crossed. It's very upsetting, though, really. The only people who should be climbing perimeter fences in France are foreign nationals at Calais, desperate to reach this country and the warm, welcoming embrace of Theresa May. President Hollande said he was worried the protests would harm France's image abroad, but we can reassure him that we will continue to think of his countrymen as a great bunch of lads and not a load of roll-neck-wearing, Gaulois-smoking layabouts who like to go home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and only really snap into action with a chance of surrendering to the Germans. Two points to Terry. Holly, where are shoppers no longer getting carried away?
This is the big news that in England, because of course it's always already happened in Scotland and Wales, that we will be being charged 5p for plastic bags from now on, with certain caveats, unless you're buying chicken, sharp blades and instruments. It's a real trigger word for a Glaswegian, isn't it? What, the idea of a sharp instrument?
Just the idea of going into a shop and going, just the chicken and a knife. So, no, nothing else, I'm done, thanks.
You've got to carve it, Susan, it's perfectly practical.
What else is there? Seeds and nuts, that all goes in. Any kind of pills or prescription drugs, you can get a bag full of these things. But everything else, you have to pay 5p. This is great news for me to find out that plastic bags are 5p because I've got about 200 of them stuffed down the side of my fridge, and that is now my pension plan.
There was an article in one of the papers, and it was saying, dodge this 5p tax by taking your own bag. And it's like, yes, that is the point. Yeah.
In the old days, my mum actually, there was actually shopping bags, weren't there? So you have one for the greengrocer, always have bits of like, you know, kind of dust off the potatoes in the bottom of it, one for the green groceries and one for the thingy. And it used to be embarrassing having to go to the shop for your mum. Sounds like I'm from the Dickensian period. My mum was terrible. She used to send you to the butchers and say, you tell that butcher that stewing meat last week was horse meat. And the butcher would say, what's your mother said this week? And you're being a big kid.
In a way, it's quite sort of depressing, this story, because it is about saving the environment, you know. It's like there is a reason why they're doing it. It's not just a fun thing to raise more taxes. It's almost as if, sort of, you know, the world has said to the population at large, look, you have to stop using these or the planet are going to die. Turtles are going to have them wrapped around their faces and your children are going to be poisoned by the toxic sea and we'll have to burn them and the planet will run out of air. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever. It's like, look, we'll give you 5p. And it's like, ooh, I'm in.
Yeah. One thing I would say that I'm glad about that happened in Scotland was say that I was able to use, I have a tartan shopping trolley. And I'm not ashamed of it. I am often surprised I'm not on BBC Three more often. But I have a tartan shopping trolley.
Can you fit inside it?
I can, yes. I can. Do you know, that was the first thing my wife and I tried.
when you bought it?
It's just nice to be able to have a tartan shopping trolley and not feel smug and go, yeah, well, laugh if you like, but I'm not paying 5p.
They're worried that people are going to start nicking baskets. That's one of the big concerns.
Well, they're doing really well out of it, the wire basket making industry. They're one of the this week's big successes.
Or as you call it, a hamper.
Maybe during my early career I did.
The flip side of this, though, is all the bags for life you have to get, you know, the canvas ones. I mean, I spent a couple of months up in Scotland the other year, and I kept forgetting my plastic bags and my bag for life. And so I ended up, you know, at the end of 2 months, I had, like, 8 bags for life, and I've now got to live a really long time.
Yeah, well, I used to have one of those Sainsbury's bags for life. It had an elephant on the side, and then on the elephant it said, I'm big and sturdy. But the elephant's eyes, two big circles, I used to read it together. I thought the bag said, ooh, I'm big and sturdy.
Tesco's one, and I had it for a long time, and it said every little helps on the side, but the E got scratched off and it just said very little helps.
Spuriously, this is the 5p charge on plastic bags introduced across the United Kingdom from Monday. No word on how this will affect the amount you tip the checkout girl, which I'm sure was common practice the last time I did my own shopping in 2004. It has been estimated that the 60 billion plastic bags used in the past decade have done almost as much damage to the environment as my auntie's Volkswagen Passat TDI. There are many exemptions to the rule. For example, you will get a plastic bag if you're buying loose seeds, raw meat or live fish. And plastic bags will continue to be given out by retailers on trains. This is serendipitous due to the large amounts of grain, mince and still thrashing pollock still sold on the West Coast mainline. Prescription medicines will be presented in a free plastic bag to preserve patient confidentiality, which may or may not have already been compromised by the pharmacist repeatedly shouting, "Maureen, where's the bum cream?" There's also an exemption for axes, knives and razor blades on the very sensible grounds that if someone is standing at a checkout brandishing an axe, it would be something of an imprudent time to ask them for 5p for a carrier bag. Two points to Holly. Terry, where isn't there a scrum for tickets?
Oh, yes. Well, this is rugby, isn't it? Is that what we're talking about
here?
Yeah. What a good guess. Right. And that's because it's the Rugby World Cup, yeah?
Correct.
Just guide me a bit here, because I'm not an aficionado, you know, on the game of rugby. You know, sort of egg-chasing, the rest of it. You're going to see it as a kind of inverted snobbery, aren't you? And it is. Right. Because what I'm saying is that if William Webb Ellis, who invented rugby, had gone to a state school and he picked the ball up and started running with it, handball, free kick. At a public school, because they're so flooded, aren't they, with self-regard and self... It's like, I say, Webb Ellis has invented a new game. Well done, old chap. But it does seem to me that the whole England fiasco, you know, because England are out of the World Cup, and a lot of the blame is being laid at the doors of Sam Burgess and Owen Farrell, and they're both a bit too northern, aren't they, in rugby league. I bet they've got hardly any Latin and no Greek whatsoever, so no wonder the line-outs are going all right.
Yeah. I'd just like to say I'm quite enjoying the Rugby World Cup. For once, Scotland might have a chance of not being awful. You have no idea how glorious that is for us as a country.
There is this immense confusion when the first round finishes, and it's like, what? There's more.
Yeah. You know, we're not used to. I love rugby. It is my favourite of all of the sports, apart from darts and snooker. And
what about golf?
Yeah, I quite like that as well.
Oh, God, I'm dying.
Listen. I think we'd already established, Teddy, we were never going to get married. So I think it's okay that we disagree on a couple of things. I love rugby. I think the World Cup's been smashing. Hopefully people in England will still keep watching. I love a rolling maul. That is my favourite moment in the game. Do you like a rolling maul?
I thought that was a cooking term.
a rolling maul. Scotland used to be incredibly good at the rolling maul.
What is a rolling maul?
Well, basically...
Don't tell. Demonstrate.
Do you need me for this? Yeah, come on.
Right. If you're listening on the radio, press your red button. I think it...
I'm 80% sure that's how I got pregnant. the England-Uruguay game, I'm still going to watch it, and hopefully England will do well. I think there is a misconception that people in Scotland don't want England to succeed, and that is wrong, because I do want England to do well. It's just a shame you've not.
But really, you know, England are out of the World Cup. You know, the World Cup's in England. I mean, in a way, I think we should just cancel it now. You know what I mean? Everybody go home. The party's over.
Sportingly, this is the news that tickets to England's match against Uruguay are going cheap after England crashed out of the Cup following their defeat to Australia. Tickets that were originally priced at up to £250 are now changing hands in return for a dozen eggs or the promise of a lift. Uruguay themselves have had a disappointing World Cup, although some pundits suggest not as hard as their 1972 season, where they suffered an injury crisis when their plane crashed in the Andes and they had to survive by eating each other, which in the world of rugby union has been a sin bin offence since 1996. ITV alone could lose up to £1 million per match in advertising revenues as viewing figures drop off. ITV were already having trouble with the World Cup coverage, with much of their usual audience being utterly perplexed that they can't ring in to vote off the team they like the least. Scotland and Wales are still in it, and presumably if they win, everyone can claim any success they achieve as their own. That is, after all, how the United Kingdom works. 2 points to Terry. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share?
This is from Andrew Christie from the Parish Notice at High Church Hilton, Aberdeen. It says, you are invited to a fashion show and evening tea on Tuesday the 1st of September at 7:30 in the church. Tickets priced £12 are available from members of the social committee. See posers for more details.
Terry.
I don't know why. This one just tickled me. And it appealed to my domestic side, and it's from the BBC Good Food website, and it was sent by Robert Emrys Jones, and it's a tip. Paprika. If you can't get hold of tinned tomatoes with paprika, just use a can of plain chopped tomatoes and add a pinch... I'm going to do that.
Susan.
This was found in the Simply Worthing magazine. It was sent in by lots of people. Classical singer Russell Watson has soared to great highs in his career, but has also experienced terrible lows. He's performing in Worthing.
Thank you, and now let us take a look at the final score. Hugo and Holly have 11, but Terry and Susan have 12. Don't shrug and say whatever, Hugo. A great deal of care has gone into those points. They're a very, absolutely integral part of the show. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Camden New Journal, sent in by Non Shaw.
Thinking of having varicose vein surgery? Join us on Tuesday, the 6th of October, for a varicose vein opening evening.
And with that, from crew, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Ripkin, Holly Walsh, Terry Christian and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, James Kettle and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Harry Sriskanther. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC radio comedy production.